Hi, I'm Jody Walmsley, author, keynote speaker, and happiness expert. I'm talking to you today from the Simply Laughter Online Summit. My next guest is Joe Hoare. Now, he's in the UK, and he's going to be talking to us all about how to be very clear about your message that you want to actually use in laughter yoga, and that way you're going to draw your tribe. He's also going to be talking about the importance of doing your apprenticeship before you start doing corporate laughter. Have a great session. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you, Jody. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm just so excited. I'm learning so much about all the laughter yogis around the world and what they're doing. So where are you based?
I'm based in Bristol, UK.
Okay. Wonderful. And where did laughter yoga all start for you? What's your story?
Well, in a way, it started back in 1996, because I read an article in the Funny Old World section of Private Eye. And if you're not familiar with Private Eye, lots of people will be. If you're not familiar with Private Eye, it's a really good sort of magazine, and it has this quirky section called Funny Old World. And in the Funny Old World, they pick out stories from around the world. Mm-hmm. And I read, and I've still got a copy of the original article about the laughing clubs of India, right? And it was, and so this was sort of less than a year after laughter yoga. Well, in those days, it was still laughing clubs. It was still the laughter clubs.
Yeah.
And I came across, and I thought, that looks interesting. So that's where I first came across the actual sort of laughing clubs, a bit. And the reason for that, you see, is because I've been in the personal development, so personal well-being field for a while, and at that time, I was interested in sort of free your natural voice. And all kinds of voice, getting us back in touch with our natural voice and all that. One sort of really good technique for that, for helping us reconnect that, is laughter. Because laughter, as we know, it's a whole body experience, and it relaxes our whole body. And the point about our whole body is our voice is supported by our whole body. Our voice is not just a throat thing. It's our whole body is our vocal resonator. And so there's a huge... So by the time I came across these laughing clubs of India, as I described, there's already a huge amount of laughter in my work because it underpins our voice, you see. So that's how I that's the immediate trail into laughter yoga for me.
That's wonderful. Now, laughter yoga often causes a lot of question because the yoga part, they never focus on the laughter. They always hear the yoga. Now, I believe that you really concentrate on the yoga part of the laughter yoga. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Such a good question. it goes right to the heart of it. You see, there was a really good article written, I think, about 18 months ago. It's written in 2016 by Dr. Kataria, and so published on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And there he talks about laughter and yoga, and how yoga is about union. It's about sort of connecting, so if you like, so heaven and earth, so to speak, and also connecting outward with fellow human beings. And that absolutely resonates, that makes sense to me. I happen to have a copy of a book of his from way back when. Because he gave it to me in sort of 2002, I think, and in this book he described it as Hatha yoga, right? what I love is the way that laughter connects. You see, laughter connects us with ourselves. It connects us with a sense of something larger than ourselves. And through this sense of sort of a connection, that's how we expand and grow and do all the kinds of things that happen through the practice of yoga, because that's what yoga is all about, you know, connection and union and laughter and laughter techniques and laughter exercise and laughter yoga can do all that. So that's, you know.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, we use laughter exercises, but you say that you prefer to focus on the yoga side and just let it flow. Can you tell us more about that?
What I love in the way in laughter yoga, among other things, is the way it's become a very broad church now. Right? Mm-hmm. There are so many that, you know, it's grown exponentially in the past sort of 5 years even. I love the self-empowerment aspect of laughter yoga. For me, the focus of all my work actually is personal well-being, because for me, there's nothing more important than personal well-being. And I kind of remind people of this all the time, and it's stuff we all know. And it's stuff we often forget.
Yes. That,
you know, that gap between what we know and what we actually do in our own life.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all about personal well-being. You know, mm-hmm. When we're in a good place, everything goes well. If we fall to pieces, we can't function. And so for me, the purpose of laughter yoga is to enhance our personal well-being. Right. And that for me is very much a yoga activity, because that's the purpose of yoga.
Okay, great.
To help us be well. That's one of the purposes of yoga. It is about sort of connection, you know, and living sort of harmoniously, and you know, and looking to be at peace with what is, and laughter is just, and laughter yoga is just an extremely joyful way of doing this. So that's just, you know, for me, that's just fantastic. There's a lovely quote, you see, there's a lovely quote from Deepak Chopra, which is, true spirituality means not taking ourselves too seriously.
Wonderful. And that is something so important, and the message that we are always trying to get across. Now, there has been in the laughter yoga sector the difficulty, like I mentioned before, about using laughter and yoga. And have you found ways to get more people interested? Because some people think that yoga is all about poses and about mats and lycra and all those things.
Yes.
How do you get around it?
I've been doing it now quite a long time.
Mm-hmm, right? You have.
the whole thing about the Bristol Laughter Club is now the longest running series of laughter yoga workshops outside India. Now we're coming up to being sort of 15 years old. There's a kind of reputational thing. So irrespective of what it's called, you know, because it's been based here in Bristol for almost 15 years, a reputation builds. You know the way, if you just hang in and do something, I think again it's a Longfellow quote. So a lot of success is perseverance. If you keep knocking at the door, sooner or later someone will hear something, right? Yes, absolutely. There's still a massive amount of sort of misunderstanding about sort of laughter and yoga and people not. Absolutely, so not really understanding or not knowing what it is. But nowadays, compared to say even so 10 years ago, I find the whole mood is much more open and much more inquiring. Because people are, you know, we are all interested ultimately in things that work. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what we call it. Right? Ultimately, what matters to us when our backs are in any way to the wall is does this thing work? Right?
Yeah.
So you can call it squiggly buff.
That's a good one.
If squiggly buff works, that's what's important to people. And so what happens are people they have an experience and it connects them. They fire up in some way. And so they go out as an ambassador, basically. So everybody who has a good experience sort of goes away as an ambassador. And therefore, I have found it's been my experience that the title sort of laughter yoga has become less and less of an impediment, because it definitely used to be an impediment, right? But that is easing now. Even though there's still a lot of misunderstanding about sort of what laughter yoga is, right? In the generals of perception, that is easing. B, people are becoming more inquiring, and C, laughter yoga it has more and more visibility, right? And so, as a global as a global phenomenon, and people have seen. I get all kinds of people. So yesterday, people said they'd seen laughter yoga on the Royal Marigold Hotel. So they see it in all these sort of different places. So it kind of something clicks. So even if they don't know what it is, they aren't put off by it in the way that they would have been 10 years ago.
I think especially lately, there's been so much on TV, on BBC and all over the place. And people are contacting us more. And I think people are looking for a different way, because whatever they're doing now is not working. So they know that they need to try something different.
So, that's right. None of us ever. We never. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's going along fine. You just carry on sort of with what you're doing. But if something isn't working so well, then we start to get curious and we start to investigate this, that, and the other. But just going back to the yoga bit, before I started sort of focusing on sort of laughter yoga as a business, I was running the British Medical Association accredited stress management courses, right? And I was doing one for a client, and when the sponsor said, talk about stress and relaxation and how to do it, and he said, I hope you're not going to be teaching them yoga. and there's such a kind of disdain, and his lip curled as he said that. And this is about sort of 20 years ago, right? So we do come from a place where there is not only sort of misunderstanding, but there is kind of hostility to the whole thing called yoga, right? And we're still not out of the woods yet, right? And the thing is, yoga doesn't sit comfortably with some people.
No.
For whatever reasons, and that's okay. That's the way it is. There are certain mindsets that for whom the word yoga just presses the no button. And if that door is closed, then that door is closed.
Exactly.
And if there's a tiny chink. And I find a lot of my work comes with that tiny chink, right? They often can't bring themselves to say laughter yoga, right? They know it is laughter yoga, but they like to call it something different.
So they might
just call it laughter, right? Or they might call it laughter wellness, right? That I'm finding is a title that a lot of clients, a lot of people are happy to go with, right? They can get kind of laughter wellness. Right?
Yeah, I've used that for many years myself when I was in the Middle East, and I found that did ease it. But now there's actually something called laughter wellness, which is a practice, and we're going to be covering that in a whole interview. But definitely, right. I think that, it's also up to us to educate people, and that's one of the things I want to do today. And you talk around wellness, so this is your business. Now, how have you got involved in this laughter and wellness business? How's it working out for you?
Great.
Yay! And what tips can you give us?
First tip, and the most important tip, is to be really, really clear about why we're doing it.
Yeah.
Start from a place of absolute clarity. right? And once we have done that, once we have achieved, then we can start expanding outwards and start putting it into action, right? But the most important, I had a mentor. One of the best things I ever did in my sort of business life was to get a business mentor. And I thought he's going to give me those sort of tips and targets. You've got to make this many calls. And it wasn't any of that at all. He said, first of all, get really clear. Mm. And it was the last thing I was expecting him to say, and we're still in touch. We sort of co-mentor each other sort of nowadays. It was such good advice. So get really, really clear about what it is we're trying to do, right? And in that process, we will then sort of find our clients. We will then sort of find our tribe. We will then find the people we naturally communicate with. Right? And who we have a rapport with, and who we have a flow with, and I vaguely discourage people from the first of all, I love quotations. Okay, there's a quotation from someone called Caroline Miss, who you might or might not have come across, and I think she was a neuroscientist, and then she became a healer, and she does all kinds of wonderful stuff. Caroline MYSS, look her up if you and she says that when people come to say come to her and they say, should I start on the spiritual path, right? She says no, but if you start, never stop.
That's awesome. I think the more that we start to investigate, the more we learn, the less we know.
Yes. So, and I put that, because if we're going to do something, no matter what anyone else says, we're going to do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it has to come from that place of sort of fire within ourselves, where it's the most important thing we want to do. And when we connect with that then we are actually, as we, the process of doing that identifies it identifies our client base.
Yeah, and I love that. And something that I am touching on here is that, many people are not clear about their message. They just think that they're going to throw the net out and hope to catch somebody. But when you actually define your message, like you say, then you will see that you'll be an expert in that field. You can find out who you want to be speaking to, who you want to be helping, and then you're going to be attracting those people. And those are the people that are going to be your little network.
Boom, that's a fist bump. Exactly so. That's exactly so.
So lovely.
So about a few years ago, I decided I really wanted to focus on corporate clients, on corporate clients. And I couldn't quite believe it. Almost within a day of really becoming really clear about that, a client got in touch, and I had to kind of pinch myself, because it was as if I was dreaming, and I did the work and I hated it. Right? And it was so good. And I thought to myself, I never ever want to do that kind of work again. Because it was a kind of, I tell you what it wasn't. It wasn't about personal well-being. It wasn't about, person-centered sort of living. It wasn't about, tolerance and warmth and compassion. It wasn't about how we can help support each other and live more harmoniously. It was a kind of it wasn't even I don't think they quite knew what they wanted, right? And that didn't help, because I think so far them wanted, well, it's got to help us make more money, right? Another part was, well, we're looking for something sort of to fill the conference, something different than having the conference, and so they had a very sort of muddled intention. But I thought to myself, that's not my tribe. That's what that showed me, you see.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good area that I do want to cover, because it is a whole different ball game when you're going into the corporates, and it's very different to a laughter club. And, you know, I do focus on corporates, and I've spent years being trained by Merv Neal, by other business people, because I wanted to learn the trade and I wanted to get into the corporate sector. So I took what I learned from Laughter Yoga, what I learned, but then I also focused on what the corporates were looking for, like you said, because they don't know what they're looking for. So I've distinguished myself because I do focus on conferences and bigger audiences, because it's very, very different. And so I need to, you know, for me, I needed to make sure I knew what I was doing. So I was always trying to do too many things, and it doesn't work. So I really recommend that you do focus on. So it's a great, great point there. And what about, I mean, you are focusing on the wellness aspect of everything, and this is your business. So how do you make sure that you get people to see the value of what you're doing? Tricky one.
Not really, because I am really clear in myself about what the value of what I'm doing is. And if I had to sort of to put, it's a bit of a kind of sort of to mind game. But if I had to put a financial value on what I do, then every session I would value at least sort of £500,000. Right. I mean, because when we encounter something that changes our life, how can we put a value on that? When, you know, there's a So I now have no doubt whatsoever about the value of my sessions, and that helps. So
it does, and that is where I want to also help Laughter Yogis, because they don't realize how many people they are touching and what they are actually doing, and the value of what we are doing is having a great impact on them and the rest of the world, because it's affecting their families, it's affecting the whole circle, and it starts this wave of well-being, and it is very, very valuable. So it is true, you can't put a value on it.
But we have to feel that it's valuable, and that's and I think that's a really good point for although even when doing a free session or a pro bono session, it's the content is still incredibly valuable, right? So and I do sometimes feel that a lot of my sort of professional colleagues haven't quite grasped that even if you're doing something promotional and no money is changing hands, the content of what we're providing is still very valuable, right?
Absolutely.
What I find, I do corporate work nowadays, right? But the kind of corporate work I do is because they have an initiative or a department or people who are putting together a well-being day.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or a wellness initiative, so I do go into organisations, right? But it's but I go in by invitation, right?
Okay.
They have come to me because they are interested in the wellness aspect, and sometimes they, you know, we have a little conversation, then they back off, think, whoa, I don't, maybe we're not quite ready for this yet. that happens sometimes, you know. But you know, the thing to remember, one place where I do a lot of work, and I love working at festivals, right? Mm-hmm. You just have a tent in their holes, a mass of people, you know. And it can be absolutely sort of jam packed with people, for example. And at a festival, you have no idea who anyone is. Everybody all sort of hugged up in mufti and then this and the other, you know. And you have in a festival, you know, so I do things like the World Yoga Festival, you know. Mm-hmm. You have CEOs there. You have real sort of influencers there. You have HR people there. But you never know because everybody's in there. It's a very kind of sort of level playing field, And you just do your thing, and then sometimes like, you get a call from a business or an organisation or something, because the person was at this there was a Green Man Festival, World Yoga Festival or something, and so you know, so that's why.
Yeah, you just don't know, you know, what's going to come of it. And one good point on that note is when you are doing those kind of things, to make sure that you have got your name, your website, and all your access points covered, because people then can find you and use you. So do the best that you can. Give a great talk, keynote, workshop, and then you don't know what's going to happen from that. So that is a good point. So it is a value, and make sure that you put all the details in so that people can find you. I think that's you've got to do that.
That's the kind of basics, the absolute sort of basics. You've got to make yourself easier to find, right? So you know, you've got to have a website. You've got to visit it. It's got to represent sort of what you do. So you need to revisit it from time to time. You can't just sort of put it there and then sort of leave it for 10 years. You know, one other specific tip is that I now tend not to use flyers at these sessions. What I do is I collect, I have a giveaway. So I have a 2-minute video that I will sort of give away if people sign up for it. So what I do at all sessions is I collect. I invite people to sign up to my mailing list to receive the video.
Great.
So rather than giving away bits of paper, because everybody knows we all pick up some bits of paper and most of them end up in the bin. It was a point that was made by a marketing genius who I sort of was in touch with when I was living in the States. You know, get people to come to you, get them to sign up. You know, because if you give away a piece of paper, they might or might not sign up. If they sign up, they sign up. Now they might not then open the email, or they might not open a specific email. But you can. But if they've signed up, it shows they are interested.
Absolutely, and that's called a qualified lead. So that is great. And I believe you're going to give us that link so that everybody can actually have a click on a link so that they can get that wonderful 2-minute video that you're talking about.
Yes. I mean, they can go to my website, right?
Sure. I'm going to put a link anyway down below so that they're going to get it. Because, I'm making it easy for everybody to find you. But that's a really good point, because what you are actually doing then is that you are getting people who want to contact you, because at the moment there's just so many emails going to everybody, so many people being contacted. It's an overflow of it. And I don't know, but I can't open all my emails. I know that. No. But if I've signed up for something, I know that I want it. It's a qualified lead. So it's a very good point. So thank you for that one.
It also, it also helps, as they say, save the planet.
Oh, yeah.
You're not producing all these endless sort of bits of paper and all the printing ink and all that. So it's actually you can give yourself a green brownie with a green hat on the back of the.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and I'm all for going green. I love it, and I think it's a great point. And you've written a book, and Awaken the Laughing Buddha Within. Tell us a little bit about your book.
The book in many ways was the monkey on my back, right? I needed to write this book. And it had been kind of sort of brewing in me sort of for years, right? And I'd sort of put it through sort of various incarnations, and it just hadn't quite sort of landed, and hadn't quite sort of felt right. It hadn't quite found its form. Then I was chatting with a friend of mine, and he said, well, why not call the book, Awakening the Laughing Yogi, right? And as soon as he said that, it was a kind of aha moment, right?
Aha.
And the whole book then fell into place, and I went back home, and in the space of sort of 5 minutes, I'd written out the chapter headings and the subheadings. And although I then sort of ended up sort of changing the title to Awakening the Laughing Buddha Within, That was because I invited the Barefoot Doctor to come on as a co-author, because I wanted the book to be, and what the book does, is partly science and medicine, right? Right. It's partly ancient history, right? It's partly sort of personal story, right? Mm-hmm. It's practical. It's got exercises. You see, there are 8 chapters, right? And each chapter has got one exercise by me and one exercise by the Barefoot Doctor. And so I wanted to be, it's like a little manual. It's like a little sort of primer. It's a kind of, if someone really sort of wanted to, they could sort of buy that book. And having finished the book, they would then know the basics. They would understand the basics. They would have a framework of practices that they could do, all in 190 pages. It's also a short book. I love short books.
Yeah, easy to read short books. Absolutely.
Short and informative and practical. That was my intention behind it, and I feel that's what it delivered. And the feedback I get from people is that that's what it delivers. It delivers what it says on the tin. It delivers what it says on the cover, because it is about, it is about awake. For me, and this coming back to the yoga bit, for me, it's all about awakening it from the inside out. So my whole approach is sort of from the inside out. Right, is living our life from the inside out.
Right? Lovely.
And so the laughter, now for me, the whole sort of laughter bit and the laughter yoga bit isn't necessarily going ha 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 and all that, which is great and it's part of it, but it's feeling it inside. And so in the session I was doing yesterday, right, it was a very short, it was a sort of lunchtime laughter yoga session and we did a bit of this, that, and the other, and I said, well, what I really want you to do, I want you to feel it. So when we're playing with a smile, a smiling exercise, then do the smiling, but feel it, right? And then realize what I invited them to do, because everything I do is an invitation. I invited them to reflect on the fact that you can, when you feel the vibe, you don't necessarily have to be doing the nice, a huge big smile, because you're feeling, so you can emanate, you can radiate the vibe. You can do, if you like, it's almost like invisible laughter yoga.
Okay.
Because it's a vibrational thing. Mm. But the whole point about, the whole point about a practice is to really, you need to do your 10,000 hours, as they say, and we're always all learners on the curve, but there is a kind of threshold, the jargon is you do your 10,000 hours, right? And then you really start to live it. So for me, laughter yoga isn't something that I do, right? Laughter yoga is now sort of part of who I am.
Yeah. Right?
And so in terms of neuroscience, so my brain will have rewired itself with continued practice. So all that. So and that's why I know we can sort of train ourselves to be more joyful and more optimistic and have and all that. I am aware that when we really sort of do our practice, then all our work then comes from in here, from inside.
That's a really good point, because I know I've been doing it for a long time, and because it is, like you say, who I am now, I laugh from within. I don't have to do a class. I laugh, and I've trained my body, my mind, my everything to be like that, and I am laughter. And it has made a huge difference to me in the way that I respond to people and the way I live my life. And I think definitely, and you can always see, because it comes out of the eyes as well. It's not only the ho-ho-ho, it's the eyes, it's the whole thing. You just, like you said, you radiate laughter.
Yes. Well, a group I was working with recently, and I'm going to be doing a lot more work with in the future, is the sight loss group.
Lovely.
People who have sight loss. And so the first myth that we can debunk about laughter yoga is you need eye contact.
I'm so happy to hear that, because I've been wanting to do research on a lot of different things. And I was wondering about technology like we're doing online now. I was worried about the eye contact. So please tell me more.
Well, people who have impaired vision can still laugh.
Yes.
just starting with the real basics, and they do laugh, right? Sure. They have much more, all their other senses are much more acute, right? Including just sensing. So they can often sense vibes much more acutely than we can, because we're so caught up with the amount of visual data that we have is, we tend to think it's all in the visual data, but it actually isn't. You know, the visual data can be very misleading, and when you don't have it, you then know all your other senses sort of come into play, right? Much more so, and so they can feel a vibe, right? So they can sort of feel warmth, they can feel a smile across the room, for example, right? I've done a little bit of work in this field. I will be doing a lot more. And I realize that I'm absolutely a learner in this field, because they are the ones who have the specialist knowledge about how they adapt to life, right, without sight. But they do. And in the session recently, one of the other things about sight loss usually or very often isn't complete blindness. Right,
mm-hmm.
It's a kind of restricted vision in some way, right? So they can sort of see certain things, not as if they are living necessarily in complete blackness, right? But even if they are, a lot of them they can still hear, right? They can still move, they can still be playful, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing all this kind of thing, but because this is what happened in the session, and they got playful, and they tend to be sort of often so much more articulate about what they're doing because they can't see, and so they say a bit more, and so everybody else sort of knows what's going on, and it's very inclusive, and you get that connection, you get the laughter yoga connection, right, through the fact that they can hear, through their playfulness, through their voice, through the fact that they can sense through that. Yeah, so it all happens, but without actually being able to see. You know, so.
I love that. I think that's awesome. Well done. Now you're working on a few things right now. What's coming up other than that one?
Hopefully that was going to be a big one, because they did the trial and the conference had members from all kinds of different areas in the sight loss community, and they could see how that was going to sort of, basically everyone could see how it was going to benefit. So that hopefully that is we're going to be embarking on a kind of, sort of train the trainer. It's like a mini version of the Dr. Kataro's sort of laughter yoga one, where he was saying he wanted the idea of laughter clubs all around the world, you know, wherever you go, you'll be able to find one. Well, you know, it's not unimaginable. It's perfectly conceivable that we might be moving to something like that in the sight loss community.
That's lovely.
I know that's the potential of this particular initiative.
Wonderful. Well, we'll put a link below so that people can follow you on your website, and then they can see what you're doing. And if they want to get involved, they can get in contact. Because I think it's a really good initiative. And I think this is what I encourage other laughter yogis to do, is to find out what you're passionate about, where you want to focus, and then focus all your energy on that one thing. And so I'm really happy to hear that you're doing that.
That's such a good point. That is another such a good point. So back when, you know, I don't know how long ago now it was, but I was trying to do this, that, and the other, and this, that, and the other. And even though I knew that one, you know, the thing you have to do is to focus on the one thing, I wasn't. And then, you know, I kind of, okay, I'm going to focus on the one thing. And you kind of sort of, you know, go through the process of dropping, shedding everything else. And it's a scary process. I find it a scary process. because you suddenly think, well, you're closing all these other doors. No, well, what, you know, am I sort of closing off all these other opportunities? But actually, it was one, again, another a really good thing that I'm sure you know. Because yeah. You then really find your thing, you find your thang.
Exactly. And it's the thing is, people are always, they have that fear of losing out. And they think, well, if I niche, I'm going to lose that and I'm going to lose that. But they don't realize by focusing on what they're doing, they're actually going to bring it in and be seen as the expert in that field. And so it's actually going to do a lot of good. So definitely what I'm encouraging. So that's wonderful. Yes. So is there anything else you want to cover? Yeah.
Yes, there is. Because I train people, I have a course, it's called sort of Laughter Facilitation Skills, otherwise known as sort of Laughter Yoga with Joe. And the focus on that course, what I love to do in all the training that I do is to help people find their own way of using laughter material. So I'm not looking to train people up to be laughter yoga clones, if you see what I mean. Mm. I like to give them the material, right, and then they then work out themselves how they can use it, right, very few of them actually go out and sort of run sort of laughter yoga clubs, right, but quite a few of them go off and do someone went off and set up what they call a laughter room. Where they include various sort of bits of sort of laughter yoga and a bit of this, that, and the other. Because what I find so often is that what works for people, it ties back exactly to what we were saying before, is that when they find out what their own thang is.
Yeah.
You know, and laughter yoga might be part of their own thang, but it's not the whole thang, right? And so there's someone else who set up what you call happiness hangouts. Right, which included sort of laughter, but add a little bit of sort of positive psychology and a bit of this, that, and the other. And someone else is just doing, I forget what to, you know. So it's about, it's giving people material, right? Giving them the material, letting them have the experience, and then giving them the space on the course, and also encouraging them to continue to reflect and how can I use this? What's my own particular way of using this material? And so I've you know, all kinds of people. I've had the forensic scientists on the course. I've had, you know, life models on the course, you know, as well as, you know, sort of therapists and counselors and sort of trainers and facilitators. Because, you know, as we know, right, there are all kinds of sort of different ways of using the material. And for me, the future of laughter yoga, you see, is not in having sort of lots of laughter clubs. The bigger picture is people having the material and then taking it away and using it somehow in their own personal and professional life. So that's what I like to train people to do, you see.
Great. And that is wonderful, because that is exactly why I decided to do the summit. Is I noticed that there was a lot of talk about laughter clubs and all of this, and people just trying to do the same, but I don't think that is what we need. I think that you are absolutely right, and that is why I'm trying to showcase what other people have done, you know, like Laughnosis, like Laughter Wellness, like Joy Fit, like Aqua Laughter, all these things I'm focusing on, so that people can say, hang on, I love laughter, what can I add it with that I'm passionate about? And I think that is very important, because you're doing what you love, you're getting your personal spin on it, because everybody, a lot of messages are similar actually, but it's your spin on how you put it that might resonate with somebody. So it's very great, you know, I love that, and it's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And also what I'm going to be doing with my corporate side is I'm having a second summit, which is in March. And that is going to be based on corporates, where I'm speaking to top authors and thought leaders in the world about corporate businesses and putting laughter, happiness, all of that into their field. So whether it's sales, leadership, customer service, whatever, because everybody's talking about happiness at work, but nobody knows what that is.
I know.
So I'm trying to pin it down now when I speak to the experts, speak to the head HR people in the world, and really pick their brains as to what does it mean to be happy, or how can we incorporate happiness in that field or that sector of the business. So I'm right there with you.
I want to sort of skewer happiness in a second, but just before I do, because I've been having a sort of good think about that, you know, just eternal kind of sort of self-reflection that gives some clarification. And what I go for in the way I practice and teach laughter yoga is, first of all, it's laughter yoga from the inside out, right? It's about feeling it in here and letting it spread outwards. Love. So I do the outside in bit, you know, the clamber, but my natural approach is sort of from the inside out, right? Mm-hmm. It's also then about, therefore, about natural laughter, natural, mm-hmm. spontaneous, genuine laughter that bubbles up because we're feeling alive, because we're feeling good, because it's just an expression of natural joyfulness. And when we're feeling that, smiling and laughter automatically, naturally, genuinely, spontaneously happen.
Yeah.
So that's my approach, you see. And I do a lot of the other sorts of laughter yoga exercises within that context. Mm. For me, it's all about, that's kind of, we go into an altered state of consciousness, Jody. The altered state of consciousness is called being present.
Yes, absolutely.
To be present, you know, we can't. It's all in the little 2-minute video as well. So we feel our embodiment. Life starts when we get out of our heads. When we're stuck in our heads, it's a pretty sort of miserable existence, really. You know, that's where all the problems are. That's where we create all the problems that don't actually exist except up here, and then they exist, and then it's there. And so it's about getting out of our heads, and then we get out of our heads by getting into our bodies. Clank. So I have this mantra, MBS, move, M, move. It's about being embodied. B, breathe. Breathe. Remember to breathe. And in the session yesterday, we've been doing this, that, the other. This, there's a lot of embodiment, really sort of feeling being alive. Right, and so all the smiling and laughing was naturally sort of happening. And I said, "Be, breathe." And some said, "Oh my God, I've been forgetting to breathe." I've been holding. and then the third part, the third leg of this stool is S, smile.
Yeah.
Just explore what difference it makes to your experience when you smile compared to when you don't smile. Mm. You know, MBS. So get embodied. Breathe and smile. Yeah, and when you do that, then the whole contagiousness bit happens, and the laughter bit naturally happens, and we all get. As a facilitator, I then sort of see people coming alive. That's what you see.
Yeah.
And when they do that in a kind of playful, lighthearted, or joyful way, the good vibes is and the laughter. You see, the laughter happens naturally. That's my speciality.
That's lovely, and I think that's something that we all aim to get to. I think that's a bit of work that we need to do, and to really go inside, like you say. And it's wonderful. We've been doing it as laughter yogis. We've been doing it, so we would love to share that with the world, and that's wonderful. But Joe, thank you so much. You've given us so many good little nuggets there that we can take back and think about. So thank you for that. And we will have you, and we will have all your details posted below your website. We're going to have a link to your wonderful 2-minute video, and good luck with everything you're doing.
Lovely, thank you, Jody.
Okay, thank you. Ciao, bye. Bye.